Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hello, this is the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show coming to you live from Vachon Island, Washington, in the heart of the Salish Sea, broadcasting live from the beehive of an activity we call the Gene Bosch Voice of Vachon Studio in the uptown core of bustling and bodacious Vachon Town, and sweeping the airways of our bountiful and bucolic island community. That was the voice of our founder, Brian Brown. Together, we, the Briefly, strive to keep Brian's brilliant flame alive by bringing you weekly episodes of hopefully intelligent discussion of current events, laced with humor and empathy, and always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. So let me take a minute and introduce our Briefly panel, which includes our flight control board magician, retired Alaska Airlines captain, long-tenured Vachon Airport commissioner, Voice of Vachon board member, nearly reformed West Texan, Eastern Montana raised, former Army intelligence specialist, and longest serving Briefly. I need to take a deep breath.
That's going to
Truman
say.
Truman O'Brien.
Thank you. Man, oh, man, this thing's getting longer all
they
the time.
They get longer and longer.
Okay, next coming up on the show is... yes. Thank you. Thank you, Bruce. I'm here.
And that was our show for today.
Yes, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
So our legal beagle, mediator, Fulbright scholar, former Washington State Assistant Attorney General, constitutional law professor, and former Pinkerton goon, Craig Bellis.
Great to be here. You know, but I wasn't a goon.
Oh, you weren't?
No, I was.
I was a pinkerton.
Well, you didn't carry a gun.
I didn't carry a gun. Yeah, I greeted the pilots and the flight attendants at the Pan American, HQ there in San Francisco. I tried not to be a goon. I tried to be very respectful and flirtatious. No, I meant
you were now the truth comes out.
You were in it for the attendants, right?
Yeah.
And the voice of Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group, in addition to chairing the Equity, Social Justice, and Inclusion Committee of the Vachon Maury Island Community Council, mariner, backpacker, rower, electric vehicle owner, and indefatigable defender of democracy, Kevin Jones.
Holy smokes. Great to be here, gentlemen.
Keeps getting better.
Looking for a good day today.
And I am historian Bruce Hallman.
Okay, come on. You can't get away with that. He's also the Down Under aficionado of the Guardian of the Galaxy, our resident historian from the island, and many, many, many more things.
Skipper of the Vachon.
Skipper of the Vachon, that's right. There we go.
All good things.
There you go.
So today we have a couple guests. We have Meets Accelerator Coalition Executive Director, developer of the first internet carbon calculator, founder of the Renewable Energy Market Association, TED Talk presenter, and Vachon resident Rob Harmon. Welcome to the Briefly.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah. And we have the Backbone Campaign's co-founder and executive director, director of the Solutionary Rail Project, and artful activist, percussionist, and fourth-generation Washingtonian, Bill Moria.
It's a pleasure.
Great to have you here. So both Rob and Bill will help bring the credit union to, or did help bring the credit union to Vachon 15 years ago. And we'll talk about that a bit in just a few minutes.
I wonder if Bill had anything to do with inspiring the Bucket Brigade of Indivisible Vachon being a percussionist.
I think if there was, that would be just a very small seed, and I would give Leo all the credit for moving that forward.
I know you and Leo are tight, so yeah, okay. Just wondering about the history on that. Thanks.
It's all interwoven, right? So let's check in with everybody and see what's gone on this week. So, Craig, how has your week been?
My week was a great success. Only one major event aside from, you know, guitar lessons and things like that, but acquiring the van, the new van for the Voice of Vashon, our new mobile broadcast van, a nice electric van. It's gonna look good, and it's gonna act good. So I was very pleased with that.
Great, Rob. How about you? What's your week been like?
Well, what's been my week been like? My kid is home in bed. He's not feeling great, so he doesn't get to row today, which is a bummer because he loves to row. I've been spending some time getting ready for this because I'm super excited about this. My wife's super busy at work, so I've been trying to do a little more to help support her so she didn't have to do so much. So that's mostly been my week. It's been about this and family mostly this week.
Fantastic. Thanks. Truman, how about you?
Well, I had a great time on Saturday night. Pete Welch and Allison put on this love duet concert at the station. My first time attending an event at the station. It was pretty fun. It was a fundraiser for their Vashon Events program. But man, there was some great music. Unfortunately, I had to leave at halftime, but I read a poem. Mm-hmm. Pete recruited me to read a poem. He said, "We've got all women. We need a guy up there." So the Whites read one, which was pretty fun. Amanda Knox, instead of reading a poem, did some stand-up and was very funny. Very funny. I was very impressed. And anyway, it was just a fun evening. So that was my whole week.
Sounds like an exciting week.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. Pretty fun.
Bill, in these interesting times, what have you been up to?
Well, I'm feeling a little stretched thin, honestly, but I have been taking time to hear some good music. Went to Jazz Alley on Saturday, and then that was Friday night. On Saturday, I went to the Open Space for their amazing old, you know, silent movie plus live accompaniment show. It was outstanding. So just enjoying this winter weather and trying to get a few things done.
What was the movie, Bill?
You know what? I'm going to have to look that one up. Get back to that. Don't ask me too many questions.
I'm going to ask you another one. Hopefully this is easier. Who is a Jazz Alley?
See, I knew you were going to do that. Yeah. It's Cecilia somebody. It just happened to be on a day that Esther and I could make it over to the city.
Okay.
And and I'll get back to you on that
too.
Sorry. But it was a phenomenal trio with a beautiful vocalist, just presenting poetic, original jazz.
I have to tell a very short story about silent movies. I was at a convention it was a pilot convention, long story, but they showed the original Wings movie, which is a silent movie, and the person that they had playing the organ for that was the guy who played at the premiere of that movie.
Oh, really?
He was ancient. I don't remember how old he was, but I think he was in his 90s. But he was a phenomenal organist, and he had his lunch with him. And while he's playing the organ, he's eating with one hand, eating a sandwich with one hand, and playing with the other. It was just an experience, I have to tell you. But anyway, there
Fantastic.
You go.
Wings, I think Wings was the first movie to win Best
Academy
Picture
Award.
An Academy Award.
It was.
First Academy Award year.
So, it was a great movie. Yeah. Really, really fun.
Well, and it's fascinating how different movies are with live music than with, it's just a totally different experience.
Yeah.
And it's really the way movies were first experienced.
Exactly.
So, Kevin, how about you? How was your week?
It's been an interesting week. We had Sharon Nelson showed up at the Indivisible Vashon meeting, and a year later, to sort of put things in perspective about her view of what's happening, and you know, sort of a dark and stormy night story, and then about the dawn that we expect to see as people move forward. So it's always great to hear Sharon's perspective. Speaking of family, my sister Karen is here from St. John in the Virgin Islands, and so she usually gets out of Dodge when the weather here is cold enough to notice a serious change in the temperature. So I kind of she's braver than I am to go, into the freezer up here in the States. She hit the East Coast about the time the big blizzard was going through. Rowing this morning was tremendous. We got the tour of the harbor and a tour of the yacht club and the marina. We went under the gangplanks, under the gangways, which is something I've actually thought of doing several times. And today was the day, so it's pretty awesome.
Fantastic.
And I forgot, I went to the Indivisible meeting as well, and Sharon's talk was excellent, really well constructed, and had good things to say, I have to say.
Great. Great.
So, one thing I forgot to share is that Jess Kennard from East Palestine, Ohio, visited Vashon last week, and I got to interview her with Becca Economopoulos, so that was really cool. And I would look forward to putting that out to the world shortly.
Fantastic. Yeah, exciting week. My week was pretty quiet. I did get to rewatch the Super Bowl in replays a couple of times. It just sort of like reveled every time the dark side sort of came to the top and sort of like smushed them down. So it was interesting, but a quiet week for me. But let's check in and see what hope and inspiration we can conjure up from history. Today is February 17th. It's National Random Acts of Kindness Day. That's a good day. So everybody go out there and do your random acts of kindness. Today in history, 1913, this is the day that the Armory Show opened in New York City. And if you're an art aficionado or know much about art history, it was an art exhibit in New York City that showcased modern art sort of for the first time. And it influenced American art, deeply influenced American art. Three particularly noted paintings in the show were sort of modern abstract artists. Matisse's Blue Nude and his Madras Rouge and Duchamp's Nude Descending a Staircase. All of which former President Theodore Roosevelt declared, "This is not art." I mean, it was an explosive kind of event, but it really introduced Americans to modern art and abstract art, and really is one of those turning points, if you will. And in 1972, the British Parliament voted to join the European Economic Community, the EU, and then 2016 voted to leave. And we'll see the repercussions of that. But enough of history.
I got to throw one thing out real quick. Talking about art, I've recently seen something on the internet that just absolutely blew me away. I think it's on the Facebook Reels. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but the first one I saw was a young woman. It's AI, I guess. It looks real, but it's not. I mean, you can tell it's generated somehow. Anyway, she's in Florence, I believe it is, and walking along, goes into an artist studio, and of course it's Da Vinci, and she is Mona Lisa. And the whole video is her getting, dressed and ready for the painting and then sitting for the painting. It is phenomenal. If you get a chance on the internet, you might look it up. It might be under YouTube or something, but yeah, just look for the original Mona Lisa. It is amazing. Highly recommend it.
Interesting things out there.
There are
lots of ways to spend your time.
Indeed.
On your phone or your computer.
Yeah.
But let's switch away from that and talk with Rob and Bill a bit about how Vashon got a credit union. So. Let's take just a minute, Rob first and then Bill. Just tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about your how I got to Vashon story and just how you're involved in the community and community activities. Rob?
Sure. I grew up on the south side of Chicago. My parents met there at the University of Chicago. My dad was a community organizer there. Was the number two guy for Saul Alinsky. So that's where I got my introduction, the ground level to community organizing. We moved to Brooklyn when I started junior high. And in 1981, he put on with his large organizing effort there, an energy expo, and I saw my first electric car there, and I saw a whole lot of people making, you know, they had their display booths and stuff. We were trying to learn about energy. It was after the oil crisis was going on. I mean, it was crazy in the energy world. The Iranian oil embargo thing had happened and all that. So I saw a bunch of people making their living and helping other people doing environmental energy work. And I grabbed a hold of it at whatever I was, 16 at the time. And I never looked back. I've made my living in that space ever since. I moved to Seattle in 92 and then took a job doing wind energy development internationally. That ended in 98. And I moved to Vashon. I had a friend here and an Australian Shepherd, which seemed to make sense to be on Vashon. And so moved here, started meeting people here. Bill was one of those people. And, you know, we can talk a little more about how that developed later. But I've mostly been involved in large-scale environmental transaction structure work. And so I do some work on the island. I've been doing some work with Indivisible. But the story with Bill is really the one we'll tell in a little while, and that's really my main focus here.
Oh, great. So you must have grown up in a petri dish of sort of community activism with Saul Alinsky and those kind of folks around.
Yep.
So
yep.
What was that like as a kid?
It was amazing. It was really amazing. My dad put together the Training Institute in Chicago that trained all the IAF organizers in the 70s. Including the guy who trained Obama. So it was really quite stunning to be, the Petri dish is a really good analogy. You know, you learn about what power means, you learn about how to organize, you learn how not to organize, you learn the power of community, you learn the difference between charity and organizing. You know, you learn a lot of really important things. And my dad just passed about 2 years ago, 2 years ago this month, actually. So it's been a tremendous honor to me to just be his offspring. My mother was a Montessori teacher. I learned a whole bunch of stuff from her as well about people. And that's been another great blessing for me. I had great parents. I had absolutely astonishing parents. And it's been really fun to work with the Indivisible folks as well around how we can bring some of the organizing work that my dad did into the space. That's been really fun. Spent a lot of time with Craig and with my friend Kevin right here next to me. So anyway, it's been really wonderful.
Great. Thanks. So Bill, what's your story?
You know, not completely unlike Rob. I was definitely brought up in a household where social justice was a theme. My mom's from Vancouver, BC, and my dad's from Shelton in Seattle. And I'm a fourth generation Washingtonian from my dad's side. My dad worked for tribes around the Pacific Northwest my entire growing up until like junior high. And so I lived on reservations a lot of that time. And so that was a very profound influence on me. And my mom was, mostly stay at home, she is a great thinker and would read Martin Buber and follow the social justice teachings of the Catholic Church. So I grew up as a social justice Catholic, and so I went to John F. Kennedy High School across the water. I remember being in band and coming over to Vashon for a band retreat at Camp Burton in the mid early 80s. I did some adventures, including going to Seattle University, where I helped start a Peace and Justice Center. And it's interesting because that's where my mom and dad met, was Seattle U. My dad was studying to be a Jesuit. My mom was a nun, and he was tutoring her in philosophy. Go figure.
Fill
in the gaps however you like. Growing up in the Pacific Northwest, feeling very connected to this place, also very connected to a sense of the world, not so much as it is, but as we'd like it to be, and feeling that to whom much is given, much is expected, and that has informed my journey. I was fortunate enough to move to Vashon late '89, after kind of burning out after doing a lot of activist stuff, and learned how to be a bit of a carpenter and build a little cabin in the woods, you know, thanks to folks like, Donald Roberts and Susie Roberts. And Brad Davis and other people that I got to work for here. And then I broke my back in around 92, fell out of a tree, broke my back. The doctor said I should, you know, use my head rather than my back. I'd always been a percussionist, so I went back into music, studied. And then the Bush administration, 9/11, Patriot Act hit, and I just needed to do something else. So it brought me back into activism. I realized I'm probably a better activist than I am percussionist. So I thought I would just stay on that track. And I've been blessed by this community supporting me and my friends to run Backbone Campaign since about 2003. And it's been the honor of my life to do that work.
So breaking your back and the Backbone Campaign. What's that connection?
There was no actual, I didn't say, oh, I broke my back, we should start the Backbone Campaign. But I'm pretty sure that it gave me a very strong affinity to that metaphor. And so when we were in a period where we wanted to see more backbone from our politicians, and that became the obvious theme. And then, after that, I've started to interpret it more as that, when I hit the ground, falling 50 feet, and I tried to get up and I couldn't get up, that to me is also a metaphor. That's a metaphor for not everything was attached. I didn't have a backbone. To me, that's backbone in that sense is a metaphor for social movement, and that our connections to each other and our capacity for solidarity is what gives us the power to make change and manifest what we imagine doing and giving us the power to actually implement it. So I imagined getting up. My backbone was not intact, but I think when we're building coalition and alliances, we increase our capacity to manifest a future.
So that's a perfect segue into 2009. So the economy has collapsed. They got the Great Recession of 2008. Boy, do I remember that. Whew. I made some good decisions. I made some lucky decisions during that time, by the way. Mm-hmm. But the Occupy Wall Street movement was growing momentum, and Move Your Money campaign is, you know, at the fledgling stage. And you and Rob are having a coffee at the hardware store restaurant. Tell us about what happens next.
I'll let Rob lead on that one.
Well, it was an amazing conversation. So we are sitting in booth number 2 at the hardware store restaurant on a morning, and we're both drinking too much coffee. And Bill has all these great ideas about what he wants to do. And that theme that morning was all the sustainability work he wanted to do on Vashon. There was talk about septic, there was talk about energy, there was talk about a lot of things. And I think the hard-nosed community organizer aspect of my dad rose up in me through all the coffee and rocket fuel of the coffee. And what I said to Bill was, that's great, Bill. None of that's going to happen. And Bill looked at me and paused for a long moment, wondering why his friend Rob would say that to him. And he said, why? And I said, because all the things you want to do, which are all great, are very capital intensive. And they pay for themselves over long periods of time. And so you need a large deployment of capital to make those things work. And none of the financial institutions on Vashon are going to provide that capital because it's not in their business model. They don't have a box to check. They're not going to do that. The only way we're ever going to have that happen is if we have our own bank or our own credit union. And I was comfortable with that because my father had started a bank and a credit union with the community groups he had worked with in Brooklyn. So I knew that was possible. And so I said, we need our own bank or our own credit union. And Bill, also having had too much coffee, immediately said, and being Bill, said, great, let's start one.
Yeah.
And then, and wait a minute, let me finish this part. And then I stood there blank stared for just a moment, not expecting that response from Bill. And then the conversation started about how we do that. Did you want to say something, Bill, before we exit the hardware store for the rest of the story?
Well, yeah, because I feel like we had a sense of possibility at that moment,
right,
because we were coming right out of the victory on Maury Island, where we stopped this done deal, going to be an industrial gravel mine, and now it's a park where we all take walks. And there was this, and victory leads to victory,
right,
and it fills you, buoys you with confidence, because I like to say winning is more fun. And, but also that it's not, I've always also, and Backbone Campaign lives out of this place, that it's not enough to just oppose things. We have to propose them. So if there was ever a time to imagine a next step to do something positive for the community, it seemed like this would be it. And so not knowing what we were going to get into, I said, why don't we just do it?
Right.
Right.
So we pay our bill. I think we paid our bill. We paid our bill, right?
We were pretty excited.
So I walked out of there plenty of times not paying my bill just because I was so excited about what I was going to do next, and they had to call me back. Anyway, so what we realized was we couldn't do it ourselves. We were going to need a bunch of cool people, a bunch of great, capable people to do this. And we decided we needed a list of those people. And the best person we could go to immediately to get to brainstorm about that list was Emma Amiad. Right? She helped found the land trust, knew everybody on the island, was a longtime activist, and was not afraid to speak her mind. So we walk across the street, down past the bakery, and we walk into Emma's office. This is my favorite part of the story. So Bill and I walk through the door of Emma's office, and Emma, in perfect Emma-ness, says, "Oh God, not these guys."
Yeah. Right? I can hear her saying
that. You can totally hear that, right? Yeah. So we sat down with her, and after she was done with the eye rolling phase, which was important, we sat down and got serious, and she helped put a list of people together. Rex Stratton was on that list. I know that. John Stasek might have been on that list. And then Bill and I depart, and we walk up past where the Ruby Brink is, and we're talking about this. I was working on the climate bill that was in Washington, D.C. at the time, and I was getting on an airplane the next day. So this is November of 2009. And so Bill agrees he's going to make some phone calls and see what he can put together. I come back the next week, and Bill has organized weekly meetings with a key bunch of people at the Sheffield building. They're on the calendar, and they're sitting down. And I walk into this thing that Bill has organized. It was astonishing. Like, it just jumped.
Well, I think that Rex Stratton deserves some shout out here. Rex is a person who you would take off, and if you didn't try to just run along and keep up, you're going to get left behind. So Rex did provide a great deal of leadership at that moment. So it was a group effort.
Should mention that Rex is a patent attorney, right?
Rex was my neighbor,
yeah.
And Rex, unfortunately, is no longer with us.
Yeah.
But yeah, Rex was a patent attorney. Who else? You know some of the other names that were in that group?
Yeah, there were a whole list, you know, and people had various levels of engagement. I think at the very first meeting, Mark Graham was there, because Mark also had this idea that we needed a credit union. Rex, John Stasek, Rob and I, Carolyn Anderson, Tag Gornell, Amy Herberg, Larry Shelberg, Bob Powell, Bernie O'Malley. A lot of people orbited through, but it was, you know, I think Rex, and then Jerry Henley came in later, played a very, very important role, and John Stasek, and that was a core group.
Yeah, it was the five of us. It was, Jerry Henley was a banker from California. And he had put the largest small business administration loan bank together in California at the time. And he moved up here, and he was instrumental in the hardcore economic analysis that was required to move the effort forward. He's also no longer with us.
Can you tell me tell our listeners briefly the major distinction in your mind between a bank and a credit union that sent you in the direction of the credit union?
Well, bank's a four-letter word. To me, there's a sense of, in lots of different levels of organizing and economics, I think of a community as a boat, and all these ways that equity leaves our community, I see those as leaks in the boat. And a credit union seemed to be a great tool for returning that equity that we have in the community and our capacity to invest back to the community. And the banks on the island, did, as Rob pointed out, were not going to engage in the kind of activities that we were identifying that needed to reinvest in the equity and resilience of our community.
Yeah, I would agree. And the other piece of it was we would have some decision making. If we started our own credit union, which is not what we decided to do, but if we ran our own credit union, we would have board control, we would have staffing control, right? So it's not just about how the deposits and the loans get managed. It's how we support the decision making, right? It's control of the institution itself, right? We have absolutely no control over the decision making of the national banks. We barely have any control over the decisions of the local branches, right? Like it's just not, and these are huge amounts of money. There's incredible power in that money, right? My dad used to say there are two kinds of power in the world. There's organized money and there's organized people, right? This was an opportunity to have both.
Yeah, and a credit union is a cooperative, you know, so it's accountable also to the members, which is a very important distinction.
Yep. Because banks are corporations and are responsible to
right. And you could have a public bank and you could have other things, right. but the credit union was the model. And, you know, in the 1930s, there was a lot of an expansion of the credit unions and investment in credit unions. It was easy to start credit unions. But we learned very quickly that it's not easy to start a credit union anymore. And just, I think we'll just transition to talk about this. Well, one of the first things we did is we created a community survey to find out if there was interest in this project and whether people would make deposits and how much they would deposit and what kind of services they would expect. And it became, and we should say that Patrick Christie played a really key role in helping us understand how to build that survey and make it useful and shaped so that it would be legitimately deliver us the information we needed to make decisions and reflect the community's desires. But one thing that became immediately clear as we had how many 900
responses
to this survey that we were going to be very challenged to capitalize, because you have to have, if you're going to loan money or you're going to take deposits, you have to have a bucket of money that is your equity, and you can't. It's not just deposits. You have to have this base of equity, and we did not. We would have had to raise $1 million.
That
people wouldn't get back. Right. That wasn't deposits. It was, and still, even with that, we would be only able to provide a small amount of the services people were asking for, and only be able to take a small amount of the deposits people were offering to make.
Right. This is where Jerry Henley really came in handy, yeah. Right? Because he was the banking math guy, and so this was both a straight up decision about whether we could provide this to the community at the scale the community wanted. The other really important conversation I remember was if we had to raise $1 million from the community that the community wasn't going to get back, it was just going to sit there as equity to make the thing stable, right? To give the boat ballast, right? The island had a lot of needs right then, right? We can just go ask people to give $1 million, right? There were homelessness issues. There were arts things that needed to be funded. There was this, you know, the school system that was underfunded. Like, you know, name your thing you care about, right? The idea of trying to extract $1 million out of the good graces of Vashon did not make a lot of sense to us.
And I would just add that as an activist and organizer, I've always strived to do things that are replicable in other places. And just because we could have potentially worked that out on Vashon because of the level of privilege here, it would not have been a replicable model. So that brings us to a pretty critical moment that I think Rob can describe best.
Yeah, do you guys want to ask a question in there? Because we've been...
Sorry, I do. And I think this may be where you're going. And it's, There were other credit unions out there. You decided that you didn't make sense for you to start your own credit union.
Correct.
Or so you looked at the credit unions that were out there. How did you decide on Puget Sound?
It's a great question, and it was a wonderful convergence of our desires and reality. So two things happened at the same time. One was there was some event. I don't remember what it was. Tag Gornell would remember what it was. On Vashon at the Village Green, and their Puget Sound Cooperative Credit Union showed up and had a booth. And that looked to me like both an opportunity and a threat, mm-hmm. right? We had done all this work, and we did not want somebody to just walk in, and we didn't have control over the staff or any board seats or any of those sorts of things, right? And a woman named Shannon Ellensbrock, who also is not with us anymore, was the head of, I don't know whether it was business development or marketing or whatever. She was basically number two over there. And she was astonishing, very bright, tenacious. And she was already looking at doing energy loans to families. And that was very attractive to us. So I struck up a conversation with her and I told her that we were doing all this work and that we had done a survey. And it would be interesting to have a conversation with her about this. At the same time, Jerry Henley, God bless him, Jerry Henley had pulled the financials. Remember, we're still in the aftermath of the financial crisis, right? He had pulled the financials for every single chartered credit union in the state of Washington. Wow. Dozens and dozens of them. And he had used his banker's glasses to look through them to see what was possible. Would anybody like to guess what the best financially positioned credit union in the state of Washington was at the time? Hmm. Puget Sound Cooperative Credit Union.
Wow.
Right. I saw that and the whole thing showed up in my imagination. Like this is obvious, right? Solves our problem. They're already interested in doing this. They have a dynamic business development person, right? They're extraordinarily well capitalized and stable. They have a great CEO. Like it was a dream come true. So we started a conversation with them. And that was at, you remember when when that big room in the middle of Minglement in the back there that's now a bookstore, when that was all open and there was that round table in there, right? Yeah. So we invited them up and we sat there. Rex was there. Bill, you were there, right? I was there. And this was where, for me, this was like the channeling of my dad, right? Because mm-hmm. now we're in negotiations, right? This is where it really rubber hits the road, right? And we had all met, our folks had all met beforehand, and we knew what we wanted. We were going to offer them the survey results. We hadn't shown them the survey results, right?
No, we were not going to show them the survey results. Right. We were not going to give them our work.
Right, exactly, until we had a deal, right? So we gave them some inklings of the highlights of that. But what we said was, you probably don't want to come over without our support because the community is expecting us, they're expecting a recommendation from the organizers of this. So you don't want to do that. That'd be bad. But we would welcome you if we can reach agreement on some terms. And those terms were essentially, we want three board seats on your 9-person board. We want all that.
Was this on their whole board?
Yeah. So okay. they had three or four other branches at the time. They now have four.
Okay.
We want three board seats. We want all Vashon staffing, like employees at the credit union should live on Vashon. And we want you to expand your lending into more efficiency work, solar. There were some other things we were looking for.
We also wanted the possibility of doing savings insured lending or savings secured lending so that if there were lending groups or something that wanted to form on Vashon, they could do that and they would have the tools of the credit union to engage in that. That actually hasn't been utilized, but everything else has been utilized.
Yeah, and they just said yes. I mean, they loved it, right? They loved it.
Yeah, they said yes like a couple weeks later.
Right. Yeah. So you went out to Bellevue after that, right?
Yeah. And we went in and we said, okay, what do you think? And they're like, yeah, it looks good. Let's do it. And we asked on each of the points and they said, yep. And now remembering that one of the lessons here in the Move Your Money movement is that we can get fixated on deposits. But for a financial institution, deposits are a liability. They have to pay them back. And lending or debt is an asset. Yep. And so we needed to not merely prove that we could move money, but we had to be also be able to prove debt. And that was also why it was so important that PSCCU was a stable entity, because the regulators were paying very close attention deposits right. versus debt ratio. And actually, yeah, but they were able to weather this transition.
Right. Yep.
So one thing that you talked about, the discussion you had, the brokering, you mm-hmm. wanted to keep your intellectual property, the survey results, right, close yeah. to the vest. Mm-hmm. And you just recently mentioned all kinds of things you wanted the credit union to do. Mm-hmm. How much of that came out of the survey, and what else was in the survey maybe that you haven't mentioned already that people on the island wanted at that time?
Well, they were ready to move a lot of money. I don't remember what the numbers were, but it was millions and millions of dollars. We anticipated that we would move $10 million in, we hoped, we prayed actually. We thought we'd move five in the first year. We hoped we'd move 10. We moved $17.5 million the first
wow.
year.
Wow.
Right? So another piece about the history here. So the announcement of agreement with PSCCU was in September or October of 2010, less than a year after Bill and I had met.
Yeah.
Right? And the branch opened March 1 of 2011, basically 15 or 16 months after the conversation wow. at the hardware store. I mean, it was lightning speed, right?
And it wasn't the hippies running the credit union.
Right.
Because Patty Wagner came in.
That's right.
And was the first yeah. branch manager.
Which I was just going to ask about yeah. Patty.
Right?
It was huge.
All this huge amount of trust from the community. Mm-hmm. And so that was super important, and her work with Lori was important, and so we hit the ground running. I remember opening up the ATM. Rob, you should talk about how you managed to secure that space.
Oh yeah, so obviously the credit union is now in the space where Books by the Way used to be, right, back mm-hmm. in the day, and that space was empty. And Sandy was this that the, who was the what was the woman who owns that who owned that
Donna
that's right mm-hmm. it was Donna right yeah. Donna owned the I don't know if she still does, and it was her yeah. retirement yeah. and so and you know the financial crisis and you know places were closing, so I chatted with her and I negotiated the lease details for that space with between Donna and the credit union, and Rex wrote the lease. So another place, you know, where we utilized the astonishing set of skills that we had in this core group of people to check all the boxes that needed to be checked.
I just have to throw something out real quick about Patty. Patty, you know, was at Washington Mutual when yep. it was still here. And I was working with the Vashon Community Care, and we were looking at raising money, obviously, to keep us going. And so I went to her and I said, what's the possibility of having a Vashon Foundation versus like Seattle Foundation was? And she really thought about it. And she said, you know, there's a tremendous amount of money on this island. It was amazing. I mean, she was really boggled my mind. And she didn't give me any actual numbers, but it was obvious that. And she really, really looked at that. But that was right before she went to you guys. So yeah. She was already thinking about this kind of community.
And I have no doubt that the reason that the money moved as aggressively as mm-hmm. it did was because everyone had faith in Patty.
Absolutely.
Right. It was absolutely huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so where are we here? Okay, it's 15 years later. And how successful is it? How much is it?
I'm really glad you asked that. I pinged. So let's do a little credit union update here. I pinged the credit union a couple weeks ago, and I was asking Lori, who's the branch manager now. She replaced Patty when Patty moved on. And Lori's also retiring. So if you're listening, Lori, congratulations, and thank you for your wonderful years of service to the community. And Sandy is now, she's been there forever. I've sat down across from Sandy many times. She's going to be the new branch manager, and she wrote me back, and I have some updates on this. So I told you that we moved $17.5 million the first year. That number is now $78 million.
Whoa.
$78 million of Vashon deposits in the credit union.
Wow.
Which is about a third. So that's what's great about Vashon. But let's talk about what's great about PSCCU and why the partnership matters so much. So the total deposits in the credit union right now are about, all the branches, is about $230 million. So about a third of that is Vashon. But listen to this. So total deposits, $230 million. Energy loans related to solar, heat pumps, energy efficiency, all the cool stuff we all love. Out of the $230 million, $190 million is lent to the things that we've been talking about, right? Since 2011, when the branch opened here, they've made 28,000 loans in the Puget Sound region for energy, since on energy, which is, I love this number, more than $500 million. That's the power of that, quote, little tiny credit union, right? This $500 million. And that's lowering energy bills for families, which recirculates even more money in the economy, right? That money could all be leaving the community. It could all be going out into the deposits of the major banks, right? So what I love about that is that that is exactly what financial institutions are supposed to do, right? In my view. And it's exactly what Bill Moyer and I were talking about in booth number two at the hardware store in 2009.
You know, you mentioned the energy, and it's come up before, and I remember, you know, the solar panels that are on the Harbor School right now. There's a solar panel on the high school right now. There's a desire to get the instrument panel to, you know, see the results of that energy, you know, fixed, because it's not working right now. There are so many energy installations on this island. Yep. The IGA right now in their parking lot, right?
That's right.
And if you go back behind the Methodist Church, because you can't see the solar panels there, there are so many major movements to basically bring energy justice to this island,
right?
And sustainability. So thanks for that history of how the credit unions played a great role on that.
Right. And all of those things that we want require capital to do them, right? And this is our capital. Right, it's our deposits being lent back to our community. Mm-hmm. And I do have a new announcement that I have even kept from Bill, because I wanted, because I do those sorts of things to Bill.
Drum roll, please.
So I asked in my email after I got those updates. Oh, by the way, there are 5 employees at the branch, and all of them are Vashon employees. Was there anything else I wanted to mention on that? But here's my fun new announcement. I said, is there anything else PSCCU would like us to mention? She said, we are opening a branch on Orcas this summer.
Whoa!
Oh, nice.
Movers and shakers from Orcas reached out in large part because they were impressed with how well PSCCU has fit into this island community.
Wow.
So there you go.
There you go.
It is replicable.
It is
absolutely
replicable. And this was an employee-based credit union that needed to expand to stay dynamic. And I think it's very important that we recognize that there are thousands of employee-based credit unions that could use infusions of members and deposits and lend debt. So it does make it a very replicable model. And Backbone Campaign actually put up a CU, as in credit union, organizer.org website in order to track and share some of the lessons that we learned, the survey, and to tell the story. We put that up a long time ago, and I've always hoped that folks around the country, organizers around the country, would find it and learn from what our learning process.
Yep. You know, so one of the arcs of the story here, right, perilous times then. You mentioned the financial challenges at then, and the community coming together, right, to address a need. Perilous times today.
Yep.
Lessons learned from then that apply now. What's your sort of charting the course forward in these perilous times right now for our island?
Well, all politics is local,
mm-hmm.
and movement power is relational. So, regardless of what's happening elsewhere, I think Vashon has everything it needs except excuses. We've got so much talent, so many resources. We can be solving lots of problems here, and we are. And it's we need to embrace that, and we need to not wait for solutions to be made elsewhere. We need to be able to be a model for other places and learn from other communities that are solving power. I also think it's instructional to remember that infrastructure and institutions matter. We can either feed our equity and our energy towards institutions that drain us of resources, or we can reinvest them in our community and find, create institutions and utilize institutions, shape them to serve regular people, not just Wall Street. And that's going to be a big paradigm struggle in the coming generation here.
Yeah, I agree. And I would add that what made this work, you know, right place, right time, certainly, right? But really right people. So, you know, a bunch of people showed up with creativity, especially in the early days. Bill went through that list. Key people showed up with key skills. Patrick Christie comes to mind with the survey work. But the survey would not have gotten us clarity about what Vashon really wanted without Patrick's help, period, the end, right? That's just true. And then it was those five people in the room every week with a broad skill set, listening to each other, working hard for each other for, you know, 8, 9, 10 months to make it work, right? To just drive through it, do the analytical work. This was not, there was nothing fly by night about it. There was nothing gadfly like about it. It was real, well-organized work run by leaders.
You know, you're talking about 900 responses to that survey.
Yeah.
That is unheard of.
Yep.
You get 10% of a population to respond to a survey is huge.
Yeah.
So that just shows you the level of interest, you know, on the island to start with.
I remember when that started to become clear, and I likened it to, you think you're rolling the rock up the hill, but like in so many projects, right?
It's chasing you down.
This is a snowball that you're running down in front of it because it's building as it behind you. This was really clear that we had tapped into the right project at the right moment with the right people.
You know, the other thing that I think about is BECU. You know, Boeing employees, you were talking about the Boeing or company of credit unions. Those guys, that expand or die routine is absolutely true. That's what those guys finally decided.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, we have to expand or we're going to not make it.
Mm-hmm.
So they now accept, you know, everybody.
Yep.
So are there any plans to of a way to expand our local credit union?
Well, I don't know that you have to ask PSCCU if they're talking about growing that. I think what's exciting is, well, I mean, Orcas Island is a good example of that, right? But what I think is so fascinating is that it can be led as it was here by the community.
Like, right.
If communities say, we want more of this thing that we're not getting from the existing institutions, go organize with your credit union. Bring them the deposits, bring them the loans, bring them the debt,
right?
And work with your local credit unions to grow your own economy, right? That's what they're supposed to be there for, right? So it's a great opportunity. And I think that one of the challenges is that a lot of activists don't, you know, they don't really understand or think about how important the money is to all of this.
Absolutely.
Like, it's just a huge essential element to getting the things done we want to get done.
And we wouldn't have the power to negotiate for board positions with BECU, but communities have the power to negotiate for what they need from smaller institutions. So I would actually want to keep... I would recommend that communities look at these smaller institutions, and you know they have to be viable, but they because they're going to have to, because growth can kill them. But this was PSCCU was resilient enough to make it through a period where the regulators were watching very closely. It grew back the proportion of lending, and it's vibrant enough to do it again.
Yeah,
you know, to the point you're making, this conversation that I'm about to reveal is not complete yet. But I walked into the credit union maybe a month ago now to talk about maybe some of their loan programs around energy and maybe some innovative approaches that I hadn't heard that they do yet.
Great.
And you know, they said, "Let's sit down and talk." Right. So and so that was really welcoming. So the idea that, oh, I don't know if I can approach this organization, is that's fiction. You know, you can absolutely walk in that door.
That's part of the deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also mentioned, by the way, that, oh, but, you know, there's going to be this radio show. And were they so absolutely jazzed? I mean, they were like, okay, we're going to let everybody know. And I'm sure that shout outs, right, to the people who are working there, those Vashon employees, because I'm bet they're listening to the radio right now.
Yeah. Someone moved to Vashon because they saw the article about this in the LA Times. Virginia.
Yeah, it's a really amazing place. Walking in that branch is a really. I stood in line on the 1st of March in 2011, 1 week before my son was born. I stood in line at, I don't know, 8 o'clock in the morning to make sure that I could open the first account, because I was so amazed that we'd done it. Hmm. And I have a picture. Stephanie opened the account for me, and. It's such an amazing thing to have happen in that brief window. It really shows you the power of the community and of these, what are supposed to be mediating institutions coming through for the community.
Yeah, and we should be identifying other institutions that we can reorient towards the community's interests, not merely outside corporate interests.
Mm-hmm. So we all like to think Vashon's unique. And in some ways it is, in other ways it's not. But what have you seen, you know, at this time when you put this together, and before in your work, and since in your work? What is unique about Vashon in that sense? Or is it unique?
I think of Vashon as a community of that gives you permission. Hmm. I've always felt like Jake Lair, once I was in the produce section, and a friend who's also no longer with us handed me this. I was talking about probably starting Backbone campaign or something. He handed me a card, and all it said on it was permission. I think if you come to this community with your own creativity, your gifts, and hard work, you can be supported. You can find the resources you need to start things. We have a unique capacity, and that's why I say we have everything but excuses, because this is a place of community, of creativity, and of permission. And I think we embrace the artist here. Hopefully artists can continue to afford to live here, and workers afford to live here. And so I think, again, we need to be looking at the larger obstacles to that kind of community resilience, identify them and organize around them to make a material difference in people's lives.
Yeah. So one of the things I have to say is that I've always felt like Vashon was really good at stopping things, but not real good at starting things.
Yeah.
And I have to hand it to you guys for starting something rather than just stopping something. That is huge in my mind,
yeah,
especially for Vashon.
Yeah, I would argue that, I wouldn't argue, I would say that it helps that it's an island, and it helps that it's a small town.
Right.
No one lives on the outskirts of Vashon. You either live here or you don't.
You don't, that's right.
Right?
That's
and right. So when something needs to happen, you know that it's happening in your community, right? Yeah. It's not happening over there in that other community. It's happening in your community.
That's right.
And you don't live sort of between this community and the other community, and you don't know which one you're, you know. So it has a real sense of belonging to it. And it reminds me sometimes of, you know, the jokes about Cuba where all the cab drivers have PhDs, right? Like everyone here is overqualified, right? Because they can live here because they're overqualified for everything, right? Yeah. Yeah. And so that's I remember when the pandemic hit and like the medical corps just showed up, right? I mean, it's just astonishing what happens here when the community needs something because we live here, right? And we feel a belonging for living here, and the fairies make us feel that way because, God, you wouldn't live here if you didn't want to, right? So I think it is a unique place, but I think. And I saw my dad do this in Brooklyn, too, right? You can do it in a huge city like Brooklyn, too. So it's really about organizing, and we got some good organizers on the island.
Indeed.
So we really want to thank you guys for being here today. We're almost out of time. I did want to announce that the Puget Sound Cooperative Credit Union will celebrate its 15th anniversary on February 28th from 2 to 5 p.m. Tim Couldn't Make It, featuring Lauren Sinner, will be there doing some acoustic music. And the credit union's planning on having yummy food and good company, and I'm assuming you guys will be there.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Show up and, sort of celebrate 15 years of having a credit union on Vashon Island. Truman, what's up for next week?
Well, I'm really excited. We're going to have Tim Stapleton, who's the new executive director of Vashon Park District, is going to be our guest. Going to be talking about all the things that are going on at the Park District, and get a chance to get to know him a little bit since he's new, and I'm looking forward to that.
Great. So for Truman, Kevin, Craig, Rob, Bill, I'm Bruce. We thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week on the Brown Briefly.